I'm going to have trouble remembering the names of all the characters. Write them down. Mighty, Mighty, Michael, Louise, and Trover. Mm-hmm. Those basic characters. Well, I think I'm just going to hold the mic. It's going to be easier for us. And, I'm used to doing that. I just didn't want to get any clicks and pops. Well, as I read Wrestling Season, I thought it was the most touching book, and I knew right away after reading a couple of chapters that it was a superior novel, and I certainly wanted to talk to you about it and to ask you some questions about yourself. It's set in an area of the country that apparently you are from, so maybe we can start with the geography of a Wrestling Season. Tell me about that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'll hold the mic.
It's set in Pennsylvania Dutch country, in southeastern Pennsylvania. I am from western Pennsylvania. I came to this part of the world when I was 18, the year I got married. So I've spent half my life, you know, in one part of the state and half the other. But this novel is set for the most part in the Dutch country.
It's not your first book, is it? Tell me about your first one.
First book is came out 2 years ago. It was a collection of stories called The Dealer's Yard and Other Stories. And several of those were set in the same area.
What was it in your childhood that suddenly led, well, I guess maybe, mm-hmm. I should say suddenly, but led to your becoming a writer?
Beats me. I've been asked that question so many times, and I remember only, you know, having vague writerly stirrings as a child, and I put it off for many, many years. But I did have a grandfather who, although he wasn't a writer, he was an Irish storyteller and spoke with the tongues of angels, actually. He had a beautiful speaking voice and used language magnificently, and I think that was very strong influence, probably more than anybody I read, was his voice telling stories.
Well, parenthetically, you said you came from western Pennsylvania. Where? Mm-hmm. And where in western Pennsylvania?
Johnstown, where they had the flood.
Where they had the second television station in my viewing area when I was a kid, WJAC-TV.
Yes,
I was
that's right.
From Pittsburgh.
That's right.
And me and Joseph Wambaugh. And so you could pick up WDTV, which was Dumont, or WJAC. WDTV later became KDKA and Westinghouse.
Did you live in Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, yeah, certainly.
So I also was sympathetic to the geographical area of a Wrestling Season because I worked in York County, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, which is a little on the fringe, but we had our share of the Amish, and if you ever got behind one on a lonely country road, you never got past.
That's right.
Well,
it's a wonder they live so long.
What? Tell me about your first efforts to write a story.
Well, they were by and large fairly successful because I waited so long. I was in my, mid-30s, late-30s, actually. I suppose when my children were growing up, I fiddled with a story once a year, you know, roughed out something and put it in a drawer. And then when my kids grew up, I just got up one day and started to write, and those stories were fairly whole. And I think it's because they were forming all those years, you know, how you write when you're not writing. And I was lucky that way. I didn't have a long period of breaking in and trying to get published.
Tell me about A Wrestling Season and how this story evolved in your mind.
Well, it probably picks up on a lot of the themes in the book of stories. That's almost like a sketchbook, I think, for the novel. And it started out, I just wanted to write, I don't know why, I wrote a whole first draft without knowing what the heck I was doing this for. And then one day, this title came to me, A Wrestling Season, and then I knew what my novel had to be about, and then I was able to go back and do subsequent drafts with that in mind.
Now, you write about a troubled family in A Wrestling Season. The family bothered me. Now, the mm-hmm. father, whose name is Trover,
mm-hmm.
I think of the four members in that family, he was the best. I liked him a lot. Mighty, I disliked intensely. I wanted to take Mighty by the hair and go whack, whack, whack. Michael wasn't too much better. Louise, I couldn't figure out at all. Trover had his flaws, but he seemed to be genuinely concerned for his family, and he cared for his family, and they treated him so shabbily. I mean, this is my opinion, and So I was, as I read the book, I got so personally involved, I became outraged, because when I was a kid, I looked at my father with a state of awe. And to this day, I see my father as a mythic figure and a man that I do not challenge. But Trover was constantly being challenged by his children and put down and degraded. Why did you create a man who seemed to be so nice and yet allow him to be so weak, to allow his family to bully him in the way that they did?
Well, you know, your interpretation is very rare. Most people do not like Trover at all and do not understand why Louise puts up with him. And I just find this all so interesting to see which characters people ally themselves with. And I just, I have a review here that came out of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and I think I quoted you the last line. "This imperfect, beautiful novel is easier to love than Trover. This reviewer couldn't stand the guy. I happen to be very fond of him. I happen to be very fond of all the characters who I think function in their imperfect ways as a kind of balanced whole. They all do their... But Trover's a child. He behaves in a very childlike way. He does things that would inspire challenge from just about anybody.
But he's also courageous in many respects.
Yes,
for example, taking on law clients that nobody else could stand, and standing up to these people.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad you saw that. So many people don't. So many people just see him as an outrageous, semi-violent man who doesn't care for his family at all. But he does. He has enormous difficulty expressing it in conventional terms. And so many of us see that as not loving at all.
Semi-violent. Trover was goaded to violence
Absolutely.
By his family.
Absolutely. They do goad him. They know he is outrageous. They want to pin him down. They want him to settle things, and he won't do it. So they goad him, and there's an explosion. So they're all involved in this game. And I don't think this is... I think all families have games, not like this one, but they all have configurations that they assume at some point. They all have a little dance, the ones that stay together, and they all know what moves to make, and they all begin to understand the language that each member of the family is speaking.
Well, they also wanted Trover to be all-powerful, to solve all of their problems, to heal all of the wounds, and being imperfect and being a human being, he was unable to do that any more than they could help themselves.
That's right. I don't find these people a lot different from just about anybody I've ever met. I mean, almost everybody, when you start to parse them, you take them apart, you find enormous flawed areas. You find things that you absolutely can't... Every friend I've ever had, after I've known them for 6 months, I start to find things that I just can't stand about them. You start to uncover these things, and one after another, and you either decide that you're going to love this flawed creature, or you're not. And that's the point of the entire book, is that if we are to love at all, we have to love what's not perfect. And every one of them is imperfect in their own way. And of course, it's not just, you don't just love them despite their imperfections, but because of them. They love Trover for the things he does or doesn't do. They love the fact that he inspires them to anger or to whatever. And, of course, the worst of a person is also the best of the person. So you take the bad to get at the good. I mean, I could have taken this one step further and made him a wife beater or something, you know. And then everybody would really have said, oh, my God, how can anybody stay with him? People stay with wife beaters, and not just because they're masochists. Some wife beaters have absolutely extraordinary personalities. That I'm going to inspire all kinds of controversy with this remark. But these, you know, I don't write political issues. You know, I simply sit down and try to play it as I see it, you know. And this is the dance that came out. It's not just the family dance. It's the family with the family dancing with the family they came from, with the place where they've arrived and are not welcome. And they're all rubbing together. And these are the tensions that enliven our lives, that make them interesting.
Tell me about the title. What does that mean, a wrestling season?
Well, a wrestling season, to me, our lives are a wrestling season. I'm not just talking about this family's wrestling season, but for all of us, from the minute we draw our first breath to the day we draw our last, we struggle. You know, we struggle with ourselves. I mean, there's the divided self. I don't know whether you've got one, but I certainly do. Part of me wants one thing, part of me wants something else. And so we're always at odds with things. And once in a while, we come together in moments of great joy. But for the most part, I have found that I respond better to people who resist me in some way. And a lot of people do. You find women leaving wonderful men. You think, how could she leave that nice guy? And I know why. I know because when you touch such a person, you fall into them. There's no resistance. It's like falling into a marshmallow. And I need somebody to say, okay, that's as far as you can go. I need something to push up against. I know when somebody calls and reads my reviews over the phone, this happened the other day, and I was smiling all through the review, and then at the end there were some quibbles. Do you know the only thing I remembered in that review were the quibbles? And later when I went called my editor, and I said, actually, it was a very good review, and I said, but they said this and that and that, and I mentioned all the negative things. She said, I know, but what were the positive things? I couldn't remember a single thing. I suppose they don't really interest me. I want to fight. I want something to press against. You see? I want to argue.
Well, of course, there's a literal translation to the title, too.
Oh, there is a wrestling season, and the son is a wrestler. And this novel takes place over the course of a three-month high school wrestling season in which he's trying to win the state championship.
Well, back to the reviews. It's, if a book is bland, tedious, is not very good, the reviewer is likely to pass it off. If the, not say too much about it, he might say, oh, it's a boring book, it's a bad book, it's a worthless book.
No, they don't. They say it's a nice book.
Or they
it's
might.
A nice book.
But
yes.
If there is, but if there is a book that challenges the mind, you can see that there are more facets to that writer's work than there would be in an ordinary book. And it calls for a higher caliber of review. Thus, this nitpicking that you seem to think probably is inevitable when you have a more ambitious work like yours. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. I think that's all right. And besides that, these reviews, they're just opinions.
Yeah. Well, they've been coming through pretty good. But my point was that I don't even hear the good stuff. You know, I mean, the raves, I skim over and push them aside, but boy, I can pour over, you know, any nasty comment for hours, taking it apart, you know, calling my friends, forcing them to argue for me, you know. That's the fun part.
Who wants to be criticized?
That's
certainly human. Well, tell me how you order your day in your life as a writer. How did you order your day as you were writing A Wrestling Season?
Well, there's only one way I can do it, and I have to do it every day, and I have to do it first thing in the morning. I get up at the crack of dawn, 5, 6, and I go to my third floor attic and settle in for 3 hours, and that's it.
Your house is not on a knoll, is it?
Should I answer that? it is, actually, yeah.
You describe your house in the book, is that right?
It's similar to that house, yeah. It's close. Don't know that I'm going to be goaded into any further admissions about that house.
So you go up to the third floor, you have your study up there, and then what happens?
I supper. I go up there and I do my thing, and I write. I don't care if it's good or bad. I just make sure that I get something down on paper. And I'm an inveterate rewriter. This book was probably, you know, 6, 7 drafts. Some things a little bit easier. And then when I'm done, I put my dog in a car and we go for a ride. Or I talk to the cats, or, you know, something just total nonsense.
What did it feel like when you wrote your first book? Actually, I guess it was a collection of short stories, and you encountered this object on a table or in a box or in someone's hand for the first time. What was that like?
The book, the actual thing, the book, the baby. Yeah. It was frightening, and I had some very bad moments, actually. I was terrified, and then even more so with the second book, because I know what can happen. You know, you start to know, you know, you're very innocent with the first book, and you just think everybody's going to love you. You know, how could they not? And how could anybody say anything nasty about your firstborn? And although, you know, I had very little problem with reviews with the first book, you know, there again, you know, I cried. Everybody that looked at me cross, I brought tears to my eyes. It was a very difficult time, and it was difficult for my husband, too, who could not adjust to being married to a writer. And I think just looking at that book on the table, you know, caused all kinds of anxieties and insecurities. So we had time of it.
That was going to be my next question, yeah. The impact of publishing now two books on your family. I mean, some families say, hey, my mom, the writer, and it's cause for celebration, but apparently it was not quite that way with your family.
Well, actually, my kids, just they all love anything that they see is connected to themselves. Of course, these people have become their own characters, and you've heard this before, but it's absolutely true. And my family's been very supportive, and even my husband, once he gets over the shock of seeing that book there and knowing that, you know, my name's going to get in the paper, and I think he thinks I'm going to run off with I don't know who. But once he gets used to the idea that that's not going to happen, then he's fine, and he's really been very supportive in the last couple months.
Well, Sharon Sheehy, Stark, it's a wonderful debut as a novel, and I certainly enjoyed it. I can recommend it to people who listen to BookBeat on CBS broadcasts that, despite the strike, will continue. And I'm looking forward to taking the tape back at some future point when the picket lines are down and editing it and getting it on the air. I want to thank you very much for this rather awkward location to talk, but it was worth it because I really did want to chat with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.